As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, cup replays. Chelsea demolish Villa. Can they build on that, or will there be another flat showing this weekend? Also, AFCON semis. We love Luton, Neil Mopay not so much. Man City on the march, West Ham's golden age, and an actual arse about face as we revisit the Gunners' win over Liverpool. It's the Totally Football Show. All right, listener, are you ready? Excellent. Off we go with this brand new Totally Football Show. We're recording this on Thursday, the 8th of February. Hope it finds you well. I'm sat here with Duncan Alexander.
Hello, James.
Hi, Duncan. And Charlie Eccleshare.
Hello.
Hello, Charlie of The Athletic. And also Benji Lagnardo from Pickfair and also Uncle Jeff's nephew.
Hey, Jimbo.
All right, then.
How are you doing?
It's a nice T-shirt, that, Benji.
Thank you. Always be... closing, etc.
Hey,
Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, no, I know the reference. Yeah. Classic mame.
No, I'm just you know, always on marketing.
Is oh, I see. Right,
crucial part of my persona. Yeah,
Pickfair.
That's the one.
Place to get your pictures.
That's right. Yeah, I'm back at work now.
Had
a bit of paternity leave. We're in the night feed zone. So if I talk more bollocks than usual, then just getting my excuses in early.
How old's the baby?
3 months.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks, man.
Will you be extra sweary again today, Benji?
I'll try not to be.
All right.
I'll try not to be.
All right, then.
Is it because we're on YouTube? Is that why we've got to be
No, I'm just quite sensitive, that's all.
Sorry, Jimbo.
All right.
We'll get a swear jar. We should get a swear jar.
That's a thought, isn't it? Mm. Anyway, loads to talk about today. AFCON final to preview. Daniel Story will be joining us on the line from the Côte d'Ivoire. We've got... big weekend of Premier League action. We've also got freshly decided FA Cup fifth round fixtures after the fourth round replays. All sorts of drama here. I'm not sure if you were across it. We've got Nottingham Forest. They'll be taking on Man United at the City Ground towards the end of February after they beat Championship side Bristol City with a penalty shootout Wednesday night. Coventry, meantime, will be the opponents in the fifth round for sixth-tier Maidstone United after the Sky Blues hammered Sheffield Wednesday 4-1 on Tuesday night. And Southampton beat Watford 3-0. Did you see, by the way, Sekou Mara's outrageous goal? I mean, it was the whole team, but especially him.
Southampton have played out from the back beautifully. Shea Charles with a lovely bit of composed work to get Dibbling going. Dibbling's driving. He poked it beautifully to Adams. The move continues. Dibbling's down. Advantage. Played to Mara. Smashes an absolute crackerjack. Where has he unleashed that from, the young Frenchman?
Well, it's rare you get a goal that's both kind of team ball in action, as this was. I think Southampton maybe tweeted it as... I think it was those tweets sound like playing football the Southampton way.
Mm.
I wasn't so familiar that this was necessarily the Southampton way, but apparently it is. But yeah, it's one of those... it's a bit like those Ipswich goals that went viral earlier in the season when they play all the way out. But it has all that, but then also finishes with a kind of spectacular finish as well. So it's sort of two types of goal in one.
It's one of those moments when, had he missed it, they would have gone, if he'd scored that, it would have been goal of the season. But he actually... I mean, it's a rocket.
Yeah,
he'd
have done that in Brazil.
We would have been talking about it on a podcast.
Russell Martin is doing something down there, but I don't trust it anymore. Because
do you not?
Well, we saw with
24
Burnley,
games unbeaten, not enough for you, Benji.
But the rehabilitation of the footballing brand, all that kind of thing, which Burnley did last season, and now it's not quite working in there.
As Charlie says, it's concerning that they're describing it as the Southampton way, because let's see how that gets on next season if they come up on the opening Friday against Manchester City.
I remember seeing Mara last year and being quite interested in him when he arrived, and he was rubbish in the Premier League. So, I'm sorry, I don't want to p*** Southampton.
Oh, there
chips.
You go again.
Oh, swear
where's
jar.
The jar?
But, yeah, I was actually speaking to a Southampton supporting friend this morning.
Yes.
And that was his first reaction, because I saw that and I sent it to him. I was like, whoa. He's like, yeah, I know, but, you know, look what happened with Burnley. And we're trying, maybe he's trying not to get too excited, but, okay. I mean, it does look good, doesn't it?
Yeah, the Southampton way. Could be Wembley way for Saints if they continue in this fashion. However, they've got a tough opponent in the fifth round, Liverpool at Anfield. The other midweek tie in those fourth round replays was, of course, a plucky underdog FA Cup story as under pressure Pochettino's Chelsea side put in perhaps their best performance yet, beating Aston Villa at Villa Park 3-1. Woof. 2 weeks ago, these two sides met at Stamford Bridge and had a 0-0 draw. But this time around, till the last kind of 15 minutes or so, there was only one side in it. Why? What did Pochettino do?
We dropped Thiago Silva, for one.
And Raheem Sterling.
I mean, this is Chelsea, isn't it? They are generally not that impressive. But they've got so many good players that when it does click occasionally, they can go and do this. And yeah, it was pretty comfortable in the end and featured a delightful free kick Enzo Fernandez. And we did a piece in The Athletic the other week sort of bemoaning the decline of direct free kick goals. No one really scores them or even takes them anymore, apart from James Ward-Prowse, although he hasn't scored one for your mob. But this was a throwback. This was lovely.
It really was. The angle behind the goal captures it beautifully.
Is that the one where you can see Conor Gallagher turning around doing an oh my days
and
type?
It's also the last minute appearance of Martinez.
Yeah, it's slightly annoying. Martinez gets the faintest of hands on it. I really wish he hadn't for the aesthetics of the goal, but fair play to him. He's got to try, I suppose.
Conor Gallagher, by the way, also got his first goal of the season, because in our last show, we were doing a big Chelsea is time up for Poch, all that kind of thing. And Conor Gallagher was one of the things that Matt Davis Adams was talking about, that he just doesn't score or assist.
First of the season, wasn't it?
Yeah, first of the season.
It was the game was a real sort of narrative buster, really, because coming into it, Villa had refound their shooting boots. And the Chelsea midfield seemed to sort of exemplify this like dearth of experience that they're sort of suffering from this year, especially when you look at who went out the door. Look at, you know, Jorginho. Arteta was singing Jorginho's praises over the weekend, and, you know, Kovacic they let go of, even Mount, right? And those three, Gallagher, Caicedo and Enzo, actually were all really good last night. I think they, you know, arguably Caicedo had his best game for Chelsea. So there is, you know, there's clear, as Duncan says, there's clearly enough quality there for the Klopp to... What's the phrase for the clock to be right twice
twice
a day? But we have to see what they do this weekend. Do I believe they will transpose that form into the Premier League? God knows. You just don't know with Chelsea. It's like United.
I mean, we're hurtling towards a 2022-style league and FA Cup final between Chelsea and Liverpool.
Yeah.
So we're reliant on the Southampton way to go to Anfield and prevent this.
Okay. Who did Chelsea have in the next round?
Leeds.
We're home.
A fixture dripping in...
History and violence, yeah.
Leeds, who earned their place in the last 16 with a 4-1 victory against Plymouth.
One of the wettest games I've ever seen.
Is that right?
It rained. I mean, it's rained a lot all week in various places, Suzanne Charlton style there. But, it was a sort of game where, but I imagine both managers wept. You wouldn't be able to tell so much water, but because it went to extra time and no one needs that.
Okay, and a shower of goals for
time.
For Leeds. Yes, it did go to extra time.
Yeah, it's called 4-1.
Oh, yeah, they won. Yes, 4-1. Yeah. It was
sorry, my brain
rare.
Just went 4-1.
Yeah. I know it is. I saw a 4-1 AET. It's lovely.
Yeah, that is a rare treat.
Forgot about Willy Nyonto. Like he is. I'm sort of surprising that he's just remained in the Championship all season. Like last year when we played them at Elland Road, he was the best player on the pitch. They've done quite well to retain some of those players. Leeds. I know they lost Sinisterra, but. Fun team, really fun team.
Okay. While we're speaking about exciting people, Noni Madueke, a lot of Chelsea fans very excited about his performance against Villa and the way that Poch pushed him and Nicholas Jackson up to essentially pin back Villa and stop them doing their usual thing. Have Villa been a bit found out of late, do you think?
Well, I don't know about found out. I think they were always slightly overperforming when they were like right at the top. And it is surprising because they had this amazing home record and now they've lost two in a row.
2023, they only lost four home games in all competitions all year. They've lost both of their home fixtures so far this calendar year.
I mean, they were on a crazy run from when they lost in February to Arsenal. They won every home league game until about December, until they drew with Sheffield United. I don't know if they've been found out a little bit. I just think they don't have quite the squad depth that you need if you want to, you know, be right at the very top. But they're still overperforming.
Didn't that happen with Liverpool when they like had this crazy home run for years?
That was the lockdown year.
But then they lost like three in a row or something.
2021, suddenly went on a...
Once your fortress crumbled.
They lost six in a row, which is the first time they'd ever done that in their entire history as a club.
But that was preceding that was a wild unbeaten run at home.
Yeah, they'd almost won four years. Yeah, so...
It was Allardyce's Palace in 2017.
Yeah, nice. On St George's Day, which is a lovely touch. And then they...
It was Burnley who breached it.
Burnley, yes, who knew but before a thing or two that, about being tough to
before
beat
that, Allardyce set it off again because they drew, I think, on Boxing Day with West Brom. Allardyce's West Brom, so he came back from the past and set the seeds of doubt. And then Deitch's Burnley were the first one. So
and then everyone had a go. Fulham,
Boots were filled.
But yeah, I mean, Nonny Madueke is an interesting player because he was at Spurs. He was in their academy. And then he went and played at PSV and did really well there. He is an interesting player. I mean, he's definitely got something about him. He's a goal threat. I know he hasn't scored loads, but he does have an eye for goal. Is it? I mean, they have so many. They rotate so much. You know, you watch one player and you think, oh, he could be quite good, and then you don't see him for a couple of weeks.
Cole Palmer's the only one that I truly believe in. The rest of them still question marks. Same with Madueke. Like, he had that really fun run last night where he basically just bundles his way down the wing, and then I can't remember what he did next, but it cut and had a shot probably because that's what he generally does. But he's like chaotic. He's chaotic fun. Whereas Palmer, you watch him and he just seems to always do what you don't quite expect. Yeah, he's got
Palmer.
Yeah, he's a really beautiful footballer. I think I kind of keep working out how do we fit him into an England side. I'm not sure he does on this kind of iteration of England. But
take him in the squad and then
then let Gareth out. And
has he got a Jordan Henderson costume? That might get him out.
Very nice. So we'll see if Chelsea can repeat those exploits in the league when they take on Crystal Palace this weekend. Let's get a quick check on the fixtures of the week and match day 24. Now, last weekend was the highest scoring match day ever in a 20-team Premier League season. 45 goals.
That is amazing.
It is, isn't it? This weekend, match day 24, is a repeat of the Boxing Day fixtures when... Harp noises, please. David Moyes won his first ever game at the Emirates as West Ham beat Arsenal 2-0. Man United came from 2-0 down at halftime to vanquish Villa 3-2. Forest won 3-1 at Newcastle with Chris Wood scoring a hat-trick. Luton beat Sheffield United 3-2 at Bramall Lane and Wolves battered the Bees 4-1 at the G-Tech. Brighton tonked Tottenham 4-2 and Man City came from behind to eviscerate Everton 3-1. And Chelsea were last gasp winners against Palace. There were also wins for Liverpool at Burnley and Bournemouth against Fulham in the Scott Parker was here derby. Reverse fixtures this time. What a remarkable set of results that was back on Boxing Day.
Classic Boxing Day. Mm.
I suppose, yeah.
Well, there is you mentioned before that 45 goals.
Yeah.
This season we're on 3.2 goals per game, which is the highest rate in a top flight season since 1964-65.
Oh, yeah.
Which and is that's the famous boxing.
Well, that was 1963, but we're back in the ballpark. So we are, you know, we've had a long period of suppressed scoring, but now we're heading back to the carefree early 60s.
Okay. Well. Where are we going to see the goals flying in this weekend? Should we start, actually, with Manchester City, who may well be responsible for a large number of them? They are now just 2 points off the top again after their 3-1 win on Monday night against Brentford.
And they have a game in hand.
So Liverpool 2 points
clear.
Against
Brentford.
Against Brentford.
Very nice. A quick word on Monday's performance. I noticed that, once again, City conceded with the first shot on target, which The Athletic point out in a brave piece entitled Why Manchester City Might Not Win the Title. Do read this, please. Is the 12th time that's happened in all competitions this season.
Goalkeeper assists, and, first of the year.
Yeah.
Three times they've conceded from the first two shots.
Really?
Yeah. Why score from a flick-on when you can score from a flecken?
That's very, very
Tom
nice.
Tom Victor on Twitter.
Okay. I know you want to mention, Duncan, that Mark Flecken is now level with Jack Grealish and Kai Havertz for Premier League assists this season.
Mm. It was a good assist. I mean, he's been, it's fair to say, pretty poor for Brentford this season. His, based on XG, he's sort of let in eight more goals than the average keeper would have done. But he was on a mission in that first half to reverse that trend. He made nine saves. And it did feel at one point like it was going to be one of those City do everything but, you know, but score. But then they've got players like Phil Foden. And the juggernaut is in full,
yeah,
fully operational. Second Death Star, yeah.
That mode. That they do, that thing they do where they win loads of games and break the back of the competition. So we'll see. I mean,
we'll see.
Well, they have, I remember saying they this run of games did look like a run they could really get stuck into. I think from playing Aston Villa in fairly early December to Manchester United at the beginning of March, they play one top half team, which is Newcastle.
They lost the game at Villa, right?
They lost at Villa, yeah. And that was the point at which people thought, oh, maybe this is going to be different. And now they've
well,
gone on the run.
I feel like, so Bernardo Silva and Rodri and De Bruyne are sort of like Pep's Horcruxes, his like sole subdivider on a football pitch. And in the three games they've lost this season, those three were not playing together. In fact, Silva played in two of them. So Silva played versus Villa and he played versus Arsenal. And when they lost to Wolves, the other team they lost to, none of those three were playing. I do sort of feel now that like Rodri's fit again. Obviously, KDB's back. Mm. Silva's playing regularly. Like, we're just kind of buggered, aren't we?
I mean, it's
like,
a year since Rodri lost a game. So,
right?
Yeah, he basically went, yeah, more than a year.
Let's see. For now, they are still 2 points behind Liverpool. They have won nine games in a row. They do have a game in hand. They did have Haaland and De Bruyne starting together for the first time since the opening day of the season, Monday night at the G-Tech. But next up, they host Everton.
Everton drew this game last season.
Yeah, he did.
With Frank Lampard in charge.
Yeah.
So anything's possible.
They scored in this game last season with their first shot on target.
They did.
I know that because it was their only shot on target. Yeah.
It was a bit of a freak draw. It was an amazing goal, Damari Gray. Yeah, I mean, I think they'll probably have to be similarly lucky, in inverted commas, to get a point on the weekend because City will dominate the game. I mean, Everton as well. I don't know if Onana and Doucouré, either of them, will be back. That's really big for them. Been missing both of them. I think it's if they're without both of them, even if they're without one of them, it's a big ask for them to go and get something. You know, they saw the Spurs game, obviously, last week, and they did well in that to come back into it. But this is...
They won't have Dyche on the touchline.
Yeah. Indeed.
They'll have Ian Wone. Who, if anyone cares, had the most assists in the Premier League in the calendar year of 1995. Very much the Kevin De Bruyne of the Britpop era, as I like to think of them.
He did score some lovely goals, Ian Wone.
For Forest?
Yeah.
Who was the Britpop footballer?
Paul McGregor?
Paul McGregor. What was that about? He just was in a band.
He was in a band.
And he oozed bands. I mean, he wasn't just in one. But he
cut him open and he bled Cooler Shaker.
What band was he in?
I can't remember what they were called, but they were like he was in the audience for TFI Friday once, I believe.
It was almost like a page a week in Shoot magazine on Paul McGregor because he had a hinterland and shaggy hair and played the guitar. It was...
See, I was in Italy through all of this. TFI Friday.
Is that a real question?
No, I've not. No. Yeah.
It was surprising no one to know there was an interview with Paul McGregor in The Athletic in 2020.
Nice.
Of course there was.
All right, anyway, so Man City hosting Everton, who are in the bottom three. It is the FFP derby. It's taking place at Saturday, 12:30. The other two top three teams are Liverpool and Arsenal. And Liverpool will be facing Burnley. Arsenal, meanwhile, fresh from last Sunday's triumph over Klopp's side, we'll be visiting Benji, the London Stadium, to take on West Ham. Before we get on to the Hammers, the f***ing Hammers.
Jimbo.
We should address the Arsenal question, because we drew a bit of criticism on our Sunday night hot take special podcast, where we, fresh off the back of the 4:30 game, record our thoughts on the weekend's action. And a lot of Arsenal fans...
What flag? What flag did he get?
Well, so our take on the game was it was a bit mad, and the way that the goals went in rendered it completely unsuitable for any kind of serious analysis or even projections of a team's return to the title race in the case of Arsenal. A lot of gooners getting in touch.
I think that's a bit bad of you lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, do you know what? I listened back and maybe we were hasty. We'll find out this weekend a little bit more. But a lot of Arsenal supporters pointing out the reason that Liverpool had 0.01 of XG was because Arsenal shut them down. And if we're going to talk about flaky goals for Arsenal, what about the fact that Liverpool's only goal was equally flaky? Yeah, yeah. And that Arsenal deserve... Yeah, basically, they might shove our words back down our throats this Sunday.
I think the important thing with this is not isolated. They restricted Liverpool to next to nothing. Was it 0.4 XG?
Yeah.
They played City earlier in the season, restricted them to absolutely nothing. Over the course of the whole season, Arsenal have by far the best defensive record when it comes to expected goals against.
Yeah.
I think it's 17.8 or something, and they've conceded 23. You know, miles better than anyone. So I think if Arsenal were... I think, do you know what? I think part of it comes down to the fact that people still see Arsenal as a kind of madcap team. Mm. And so this is just another one of those kind of crazy games when they're absolutely not that team.
Are they not? Like there was that dodgy period over Christmas, the palindromic fixture when we beat them.
Yeah.
And then there was...
Why palindromic?
So just... In my mind, it's however many weeks ago the same one. I know it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not quite palindromic, is it?
No.
In fact, it annoys me that it's not palindromic. Right. I think it should be.
Oh yeah, that would be amazing.
Oh no. Why? What? Sorry. First and last game is the same.
Well, that's Bundesliga.
Is that what they do?
Oh no, they do it just exactly the same.
Like, yeah.
No,
which
I'd like
how
it to
you
be.
Should do.
You've got to go first and last, and then just move
what
in.
What do you think? Reverse.
Just completely random, like they do here.
Completely random.
Yeah, like
I don't like that.
Like last week was the reverse of the opening day. Oh, that's a long. Or the midweek a few weeks ago, and then this weekend's Boxing
Keep
day.
It fresh.
Yeah, I want it like serpentine. Yeah.
How about?
But then you'd have back to back.
Fine.
You'd like that?
That'd be fantastic. Yeah.
Just all go to a sports centre in Hounslow and just play it out. Yeah.
Sorry, Benji.
I can't remember what I was saying.
You were saying about Arsenal.
They are still. They won't enjoy me saying this, but I still feel like Arsenal are a bit Spursy.
No,
like you just. Well, I can see the fingers
reaching for.
So do you know what's interesting? I think like if you actually look at how they've been this season, the weird thing is as well is if you're going to say that Arsenal Liverpool was a kind of crazy game. I mean, Arsenal lost to West Ham in a game that coloured, I think, a lot of how people view Arsenal. But that was a mad... I mean, Arsenal broke all records for big chances missed, XG, etc., etc.
Touches in the box without scoring.
Yeah, if you replayed that game 100 times, they'd probably win it 90-odd. Hmm. And the weird thing about that game was...
Well, they will be replaying it, of course, this
week. Yeah.
They'll win this weekend. But we're not good at the moment.
Arsenal were coming off the back there of their two best performances of the season. They played Brighton, beat them. De Zerbi was, like, blown away. Arsenal were brilliant on the day. They drew at Liverpool. And then they lost. And I can see why that is like a...
And then they lost at Fulham, which compounded when they did
exactly.
Right.
Yeah. But that's kind of been their own... I mean, they were top of the league after Liverpool. Mm. It's funny. I also think it's partly informed by the fact there were so few games after Fulham and the weekend. Like, there were so few Premier League games in January. There was a lot of time for those two defeats to percolate. They didn't play again in the league for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like... They're
and
done.
And they've won all their games since. Yeah. I feel like there was a draw.
No, they've won three. They beat Palace 5-0, Fulham away. Forest away, and then...
And to Charlie's point, I think that last year they were... Going into this time last year, they were a bit mad-cap. They had all those last-minute wins, and it was getting a bit desperate, and they were kind of running on fumes. But they are... You know, Declan Rice has made them, helped make them, the most controlled team in Europe. Ever since 2016-17, the team that's conceded the fewest shots on target... has won the Premier League.
Okay, who's conceded the fewest shots on target?
By four. Wow. So, yeah. Hmm.
I think it's really interesting because...
Duncan, are you, the man who said Chelsea were going to finish second in the league...
And Luton was there, yeah.
Suggesting that Arsenal are going to win the title?
No, but I'm suggesting that they are... I think last weekend's result put them back in it. And they've got to go to City. City have got to go to Anfield. I think it's a genuine three-horse race, albeit one horse... is a glistening pedigree Shadow stallion.
Mm. I think that Liverpool game is sort of encapsulates Arsenal a little bit this season in that they have given away very few chances, but they haven't kept as many clean sheets or conceded as few goals as they should have done because they do still have a moment in them, like that moment to give Liverpool a goal, which was totally bizarre. Shoot yourself in the foot. You'd imagine that.
Ironically, if you shot yourself in your foot, he might have cleared the ball.
Yeah, possibly just out of
reflex,
knee-jerk reaction. But if the numbers sort of catch up with the underlying ones, then they will start to concede fewer. And yeah, they're interesting because they're pivoting to a different way of playing, and I think there have been some teething issues with that in the first half of the season.
But there are signs that it's starting to work, I think, and that's, you know, this time last year there were signs that Arsenal's approach, which had been brilliant in the autumn and early winter, was starting to run out of steam, whereas I think this season's the reverse.
Ooh.
So, and we know that City have perfected that, you know, getting better, and maybe Liverpool are starting to show a few signs of fatigue, or, you know, I mean,
they're missing the other way round. I have to say, I thought they were really bad on the weekend, but I did think that had been coming. I mean, they give up a huge amount of chances, and you can say, well, that's fine because they've got Alisson and they've got Van Dijk, will bail them out, until they don't. Yeah. And, you know, so I don't think you can have it both ways. You can't say, we're going to give up those chances. We've got Alisson, it's fine, lads. And then he makes a chance and he makes an error, and then you say, oh, well, we'll write that off. It's just one of those things. Yeah. You know, maybe he won't, but I don't know. I think there's something, that midfield is not. I don't think
McAllister at
midfield is going to win a title.
Like, he was so overworked. He was having to cover, and it just didn't work. So, I mean, obviously Szoboszlai's missing, and that's a loss. But
Salah too.
Yeah, and that's obviously a big. Mm. But we still don't know, you know, how bad his hamstring is.
Indeed not, and they are still top of the league. They're facing Burnley. Arsenal will try and live up to those words of praise when they visit West Ham. So Benji, 2-0 for West Ham over the Gunners in December. West Ham haven't won a game since.
Yeah, there's a fairly substantial thing that happened in between, which is that was 26th Boxing Day. On the 28th.
No, that was 28th.
Was that 28th?
Yeah, it was played on the 28th. It was part of the Boxing Day round, but played on the
28th. Oh, right. Well, it was that game then that I think Lucas Paquetá got injured.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Paquetá came off, yeah.
And it might be massively oversimplifying it, but it might not. Like, we've been pretty rubbish since then, and obviously Kudus went off to the AFCON. I think ultimately with David Moyes' sides, you know what you're going to get in terms of like aggression, set pieces, really quick breaks. But really, his teams are at their best when you've got someone who's sort of accelerating that transition with a bit of flair and a bit of guile. And for, you know, in his Everton sides, that was Pienaar.
Okay.
And probably the best period he's had as a West Ham manager was when Lingard was doing that for us. And I think and Paquetá is that guy in this team. Without him, and then without Kudus, we've been pretty sort of meat and two veg over the last little while. Kudus is back now, though.
Did you see that Jesse Lingard has found a new club?
I know, he's gone to Korea. I love that.
Yeah.
Gone to prolong his career in Korea.
There you go. FC
Seoul. Good for the Seoul.
Yeah.
Nice.
Do they pay loads over there? Or is
I
it
have
just
no idea.
A
I don't
bit
think
of a,
so.
He's doing a
But an amazing
yeah,
city.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
amazing.
It's a great city. Yeah, I love it. I'll have a lovely time.
Now, Declan Rice returning to the London Stadium. What kind of reception, etc., Benji?
There'll be a minority of knobheads that will boo him, but I can pretty much guarantee the vast majority of the West Ham fans will give him a good reception. It was very fun in the reverse fixture on the 28th, as Charlie's pointed out. It was almost perfect that he conceded a last-minute penalty that then, was it, I think, Benrahma missed in his rather kind of sad exit from West Ham. That was the beginning of it. And everybody was singing at Declan Rice, you should have gone to a big club, gone to a big... I think everyone was enjoying himself. But he will... It's not a novelty anymore. He's been back twice.
Okay.
We played him twice. Yeah, came off the bench in the Carabao Cup game when we beat
him. Which you won.
Yeah, we beat them twice.
Which he was
so
booed
far.
When he came on then.
But the problem is, right, and this is like an obvious thing to say, even if it's like 10% of the ground booing, just because you hear it, everyone's like, oh, the West Ham fans all booed. It's like, no, they didn't. There were loads of others that were sort of...
Same boo earns.
Same boo earns, or that were clapping him, or...
It's also, he came on, didn't he?
Yeah.
So that's a tricky one, because that does really open up the sort of booing.
Yeah, especially
because it's
like
a moment where
on,
you're saying, is that... Exactly,
and also, like,
whereas if he's just taking touches in midfield...
The ones that clapped... And I wasn't there because I had to leave at half time, weirdly. But the ones that clapped, if you think about it, every time he touched the ball, you're justified to try and boo him. If you're a boo person, it's an opportunity to boo every touch, right?
Yeah.
If you're a clap person, i.e. welcome back, Declan, you're not going to clap every touch.
No.
So the story obviously then becomes, oh, West Ham fans booed Declan Rice, but I'd be surprised if there's much of that this weekend. I'll probably be wrong. But.
All right. What about booing David Moyes? I noticed that you posted a very handy kind of cutout and keep guide to one side of the Moyes in, Moyes out argument. Here's Benji on social media. For the attention of Moyes out brigade, won European football 3 years in a row. That's never happened before. Brackets. 2 years in a row hadn't even happened before Moyes. Close brackets. Point two, our first trophy in more than 40 years. Point three, we are seventh. Point four, Pakazar and Kudus play for us. Okay. And point five, slap yourself in the face and go and have a nap.
James, we've never had it so good. I genuinely believe... listen, it's... This is such recency bias from West Ham fans. It's because we haven't had Kudus and Paquetar for a couple of, for, you know, six-ish weeks.
Right.
They kind of forget. Like, that's the kind of, that's the sugar in the tea, right, that can make the kind of people that need entertaining football all the time satisfied with a David Moyes team. They haven't had that kind of the sweetness over the last little while, and suddenly, again, it's Moyes out. But, like...
You've had some grim games this season, though.
Yeah, but I just think, look at the context. And it's true. With David Moyes as your manager, you are going to get some grim games. It's a bit like the Diet Coke version of Jose Mourinho. With Jose Mourinho as a manager, certainly back in the day anyway, right, you're going to get some grim games, but you're going to win stuff and you're going to have some fun along the way. And yeah, I'm still very much Moyes in. It will come to an end because all good things come to an end. But like, as I said, we're seventh.
Right.
Like, we are, you know, cumulatively, our football's been pretty good this year. There's just been
you're
some
above De Zerbi's Brighton.
Yeah, totally. Which, you know. And we're above Wolves that everyone's, you know, sort of singing their praises. Like, we're having a good season. I think people just get a little bit bored. As Charlie was saying, there's been these big gaps in football over the last sort of...
Yeah.
And you've got the last 16 coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. So
I think it is that, though. People just... are kind of willing to roll the dice now. Like, yeah, it might be worse, but we want something different. And I'm not saying that's
Charlton were seventh, obviously, when Curbishley didn't get them in the UEFA Cup, and now they are not seventh.
There just has been definite progression over the last 3 years.
Who knows? Maybe you could be moving above Man United this weekend if you do get yet another win over Arsenal, and United fail to win their match on Sunday when they will be visiting Aston Villa. We'll get onto that game perhaps next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
All right, so Sunday 4:30, it's Man United taking on Aston Villa at Villa Park. Another controversial moment in last Sunday's show when we were asking if Man United really are back this time. Three wins in a row for them now, the latest one being against West Ham at the weekend. Scoring 11 goals as well in those three matches. The shot conversion rate has gone up. Rasmus Højlund is finally delivering in the Premier League.
The shot conversion thing, I think, is quite important because they've got, it goes under the radar, I think, they've got statistically the most creative player in the league in Bruno Fernandes. He's top of the charts for key passes this year. That's the kind of pass that leads to a shot. And it's not just like pass it to someone and he shoots from 30 yards out. He's also, I think, number one in big chances created by midfielders. So if they can now be converting those chances, they could be onto something.
And how many assists has he got for all of that?
Only a couple. He got one against West Ham, of course. But I'm a real Bruno Fernandes truther. Like, he is statistically remarkable. He was, last two seasons in a row, he's been top of the key passes charts. And one of the kind of, some of the dissonance at Man United, I think, is that a lot of other managers would just build their side around Bruno. Like, he's a world-class player. And I think, you know, the problem with Ten Hag is he's still trying to sort of make Ajax 2019, and obviously wanted, what's his name from Barcelona in there?
Frankie de Jong.
And he wanted to build his team around him, and actually he should be building his team around Bruno. But if now the forwards can start finishing these chances, and Fernandes is supplying the ammunition, I think they could be onto something. I also thought, after the Wolves game, that amazing sort of last-minute goal, Miguel Delaney made a really good point on Twitter where he said, I can't remember exactly what he said, but Amari Forson set up Kobbie Mainoo for the goal, for the last-minute winner. And on a different February the 1st, you know, after a window that was not basically the kind of FFP window, that could have been two new signings, you know, on the pitch rather than these academy boys. And having two academy players link up to score a winning goal at the last minute is another kind of little fillip for Man United at the moment. So, yeah, let's see. I still don't trust them. It's like Chelsea. Okay. It's like Chelsea. Like, of course, they've got the cumulative quality within that squad to win games, to put aside, you know, West Ham's and to score last-minute winners against Wolves. Are they going to become consistent? Let's see.
Well, we've spoken about it so often. I know I've gone on about this, but their record against good teams is awful. Really, really bad. So this will be way more revealing than them beating West Ham at home. Is can they go away and beat one of the big teams? Because they almost always lose. Barely even
I mean, draw. Historically, they've got a great record at Villa Park, both against Aston Villa and in
although they
endless...
did lose this fixture last
yeah,
season.
Yeah, but recently the tables have turned slightly. I mean, I find it interesting that Garnacho is playing so well on the right wing. Because he's never really played there before. Mm. He said he hadn't played there. And it's like, you know, right-footed players on the right wing scoring goals. It could come back into fashion.
United now sixth after their victory over West Ham. Immediately above them are Spurs, who face Brighton this weekend. Exciting times for Tottenham, Charlie, because looks like Heung-min Son and Eve Bissouma are both going to be available for the game against the Seagulls.
Potentially, yeah. Son is back in the building today, so it depends how he comes through the next couple of days. Bissouma was back yesterday, same with him. I don't know. I mean, Son's the kind of guy who probably will just really want to start, assuming he's fit to do so. But yeah, it's massive. I mean, they've had such injury and suspension and unavailability generally crises over the course of this season, but now they're getting all their players back.
And still only 2 points off the top four.
Yeah, and or higher. I think they're 7 points off the top. And they've had a good January.
Richarlison?
Richarlison's in incredible form. Written a piece on him. It's gone up today. He's got 9 goals in 8 games.
What did you say, Charlie?
Well, there's a lot to unpack because he's a very interesting character, but a combination of therapy and an operation. That's the very top line, but there's a lot more in the piece. Have meant we've seen a kind of new man and a new player over the last... Or maybe a return, in his mind, to the old Richarlison. I think he felt that he lost who he was at times last year. He was going through stuff.
He scored in 7 of the last 8 Premier League matches. The only fixture that he didn't net in was, guess what? The reverse fixture against Brighton when... Brighton won 4-2.
He'll have revenge on his mind.
Yeah, possibly so.
Ruining that sequence.
Brighton will also have Mitoma back.
There you go.
South Korea and Japan, both out. I was quite surprised by that.
It is surprising.
Qatar-Jordan final.
It's a dream final.
It's wild, yes. Yeah. What everyone was hoping for.
So, 4-2 for Brighton over Spurs at the Amex back in December. This is very much Brighton, though. They either score loads of goals or concede loads of goals.
They're a crazy team. Their sequence of... I mean, yeah, they can go from an amazing win 1 week to a dreadful defeat the next. And I
mostly
don't really
the
know.
Latter. Kieran Maguire pointing
moment,
out
yeah.
that they've only won 4 of their last 17 games in the Premier League. That's the same as Crystal Palace. And look, and they're in crisis.
There is a big difference. I mean, Brighton have also had a really good European campaign running alongside this, which I think has taken away some of their attention and their resources.
After a slow start in Europe, but
but I mean, you know, ultimately
they're
won their
group.
They're
finding their feet in continental football.
They have a bad record after European games, but obviously this isn't one of them. It's going to be a really interesting game between two of the managers who are probably, you know, this summer is going to be the Liverpool looking for a new manager, possibly Manchester United, Barcelona. I think Postecoglou and De Zerbi are going to be in those conversations, and Man City might be looking for a new manager, you know, end of next season. So this should be really, really fascinating.
Shop window, Classico.
Yeah.
Very nice. Although, De Zerbi won't be in the shop window because he, like Sean Dyche, is suspended for this one.
Yeah. A lot of
Can you not be in the shop window from the stands?
I'm not sure if you can. That's one for your other podcast.
Yeah.
Hasn't that already happened with the Serbi? Isn't this the second time?
Oh, he gets a lot of...
All the time. I mean, he got sent off last season. He and Christian Stellini, one of the most mild-mannered men I've ever seen in football. De Zerbi drummed up this sort of beef with him. It was really weird.
Yeah, that was strange.
It was so odd. And he was just going for him all game. And in the end... they both got sent off. I think because it was actually one of Stellini's staff, but you get
Stellini
sent off.
Looks so...
You're deemed as responsible for your
staff. Stellini looks so, like, he was just flummoxed.
Like, yeah, I don't know what, I like you.
I've done nothing. Yeah. I think if they did that for on-pitch behaviour, I've always thought it'd be quite interesting, right? You know, you see moments where the players, like, crowd around the referee, and it's kind of impossible for the referee not to retreat and be kind of... I think in that situation, Andy the Gerson. Captain should get a yellow card.
Yeah.
Don't you think that'd be quite interesting?
It would be interesting.
Because it would stop it.
Yeah, because you'd be furious if someone else had got you a booking. I'm sure that, like...
And sheepish if you got your captain a booking.
Yeah, the captain's on a one yellow card away from suspension.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh.
Well, coming up very now soon, then. In a few weeks, is the annual IFAB meeting where they discuss rule changes or law changes for the following season. And included this year are sin bins. I think that might actually be coming. So we could see, you know, very aggressive players sent off the pitch for 5 or 10 minutes. And goalkeepers who waste time, the opposition will get a corner, which I think would be quite good.
That's fun.
Ooh, that would be good.
Goalkeepers who waste time, so the opposition get a corner. No, I'm just processing that.
That would be good.
So, would it?
Do you remember that brief period where if you got descent, they move, if you descended, they moved the free kick 10 yards forward?
You could make it counterproductive.
Somewhat topically, I was thinking this last weekend, you know when Philip Billing got sent off? And it was a bit of a debate, was it a trip, was it a stomp, was it a rake? If you foul a player deliberately like that to stop a break, red card.
Michael Clark, dangerous. Yeah. I quite enjoy the art of the...
You know, no, it is a professional foul. It is like, and it is, it couldn't be more cynical. And it is dangerous, ultimately. Like, you know, it's no attempt to play the ball. Anyway, Philip Billing, pretty pleased that he got a red, maybe not for the right reason.
Just on the descent factor, this season there have been 152 bookings on the field.
Yes.
For descent. Last year, in the whole last year, only 85. Ooh. So the campaign to crack down on descent. Back chat is operational. Man Bruno Fernandes, one of three players with four for descent so far this season, along with Andres Pereira and Nicholas Jackson.
So ironically, descent is going up. Anyway, Spurs Brighton, away from all of that, should be terrific fun, no? Two teams going at it. That's Saturday at 3 o'clock, so you can't watch it or anything if you're in the UK. But yeah, afterwards and that. Let's have a look what else. Oh, down the other end. Let's talk about the business at the bottom. Crystal Palace now. Rumour mill's been busy at Selhurst Park this week, but they are 5 points off the drop. Below them, you've got Brentford, who are in 15th place. They're only 3 points off the bottom three. Nottingham Forest, 16th, are just 2 points clear. Luton in 17th, just one. And the bottom three are Everton, Burnley and Sheffield United. Now, Sheffield United, Saturday at 3 o'clock, will be going to Luton in kind of a key game in the relegation battle. The Hatters only a point clear, but in an absolutely terrific vein of form. 6 games unbeaten in all competitions. They've scored 4 goals in each of their last 2 Premier League matches. Elijah Adebayo's on fire. And Sheffield United, by contrast, the only side without an away win in the Premier League this season. Do we need to say more about this?
But just a little statistical, a little nugget potentially. The last few games, I've been playing Adebayo and Colton Morris up front, like the quintessential two big lads up front. And what do you want if you've got two big lads up front? You want wingers that can beat their man and cross the ball in. And boy, do they have that, because Alfie Doughty, who I've just fallen in love with this season, more crosses than any other player in the league. Sorry, any other midfielder in the league. Only Kieran Trippier has got more successful crosses. And since he came into the team in, I think, late December, Ogbene has beaten his man more than anybody else in the league. So I just love how, like, perfectly sculpted they are for what they do. And yeah, I definitely over the Christmas period, and this is maybe sort of, you know, night feed, sleep deprived mania, wondering if, like, Ross Barkley is maybe, you know, up for PFA Player of the Year this year. Like, they have got some really fantastic players in that team. And by the way, just another little one. We're talking about the 4-4. with Newcastle. We talked about how this year there's, you know, what, 3.2 Newcastle games. Their last five games has been 27 goals. So if you're looking
more
for entertainment,
more than five goals a game.
If you're looking for entertainment, watch them against Forest on Saturday night.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I think aren't they something like they're tracking to score more and concede more than Kevin Keegan's entertainers from the mid-90s, Eddie Howe, supposedly sturdy Newcastle.
They're like a cup team Newcastle now. They're great fun. They're good value.
Hands up, who knew that you get a Premier League ball when you make your Premier League debut? Did you know this?
Don't think I did know that.
Okay, so Luton put out a very lovely little film this week of their former manager, John Still, who they brought back in to present pretty much all their squad with their Premier League debut balls in one go. It was a special ceremony. And John Still was there because he was, they kind of hailed him as the man who kick-started their rise up the divisions because he got them promoted out of the National League.
He did that one.
Mm. Right. He did indeed. I mean,
that might be a Luton thing. I don't know if it's an official, you know, procedure.
I don't know. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think you would have seen more of it.
Like
if it
a
was.
Cap.
Yeah, you're right. That's fair. Anyway, nice gesture from Luton. Sheffield United, if they concede a goal this weekend at Kenilworth Road, they will equal Barnsley's record for the most goals conceded at this point of a Premier League season.
Yeah. I mean, at least Sheffield United's players haven't been rude about the women of Yorkshire, unlike Barnsley when they were...
Georgie Christoph.
Yeah.
What did they say?
Charlie can pick this one up.
Well, yeah, it was... I can't remember the details, but it was very unflattering. He went into details about the clothes they wore and things like this. He found it very unattractive.
Emerson did that at Borough, didn't he, as well?
Did he?
Similar sort of time as well. It was all the rage.
When he was, I can't remember which Napoli player was moving to England. And he said, you won't enjoy it there. The women are... He spoke disparagingly about the women and said they don't use bidets either.
They don't. It's true.
It is, isn't it? There you go. Sheffield United haven't won away to Luton since December 1994. Producer Charlie, who is fond of a what was number one, would like to know what was top of the pop charts. December 1994?
Wasn't Baby D Let Me Be Your Fantasy?
Boom! What? Boom! That is so weird. Immediately followed by a classic Christmas number one, Stay by E17.
Yeah. Baby D was like a little jump into the mainstream for sort of jungle drum and bass to some extent, wasn't it?
Great song.
Yeah.
Two different musical genres,
of course, as has been recently established on University Challenge.
Very much so, yeah, yeah.
What else is happening this weekend?
Did you say Entrance?
Yeah, well, that was a couple of months later. Set Me Free, which I think of as quite a...
Had a bit of a jungle beat.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that being...
We'll talk about this instead, shall we?
Performed on Top of the Pops.
She was in a limo, I think, and out the sunroof.
What was their follow-up
hit? I tried that in the States once. Please shut me down. With extreme prejudice.
Entrance did a bad follow-up.
Did they? I don't remember the follow-up.
Yeah, they... what was it? It was a cover. I think they did Oh What a Night. I think Entrance did a version of Oh What a Night.
Oh, yeah. Moving on.
Sorry.
Palace are hosting Chelsea this weekend. As I say... These are tense times at Selhurst Park. A lot of questions about whether Roy Hodgson would still be in place for that fixture. As we record, no further news on that. Also coming up, you've got Wolves against Brentford. Sounds familiar? That's right, listener. It's actually the fourth meeting between these two teams in the space of just 6.5 weeks. There was a 4-1 win for Wolves at the G-Tech in the Premier League. And then there was a 1-1 draw there in the FA Cup. And then a 3-2 win for Wolves in the replay of that FA Cup tie at Molineux. Ooh, all right. Neil Mope Claxon, what's he going to get up to this weekend, the scamp?
Well, he's almost perfectly designed to annoy everyone on the planet, so I'm just trying to think what would annoy Wolves fans most.
Why do people find Neil Mope so annoying?
He is an irritant.
But he's a pantomime irritant.
Yeah.
I love him. Obviously, when he's playing West Ham, I want to kill him, right? But
yeah.
I love what he's done this year. He's really let into this.
A bit of a throwback. You see a lot of players like that in the 90s, but no, everyone's so professional and, you know.
Morpay just straight in. He doesn't mince his
words. I mean, he is the kind of somebody who unites doesn't he? Because everyone, all fan bases despise him.
But that's why I love the fact that it's so brazen. Like against Spurs.
And indiscriminate.
Yeah, yeah. He just doesn't care. He's like a cluster bomb. Like against Spurs, I was generally laughing out loud that every time something happened, suddenly there was Morpay just nudging into someone for no reason, winding them up. Now, obviously, the narrative there was, oh, but they ended up winning and they did the dart celebrations back at him or whatever. But, like, I still think, like, Thomas Frank is quite a cerebral manager, right? Mm. He could be saying to Morpay, cut it out, mate. It's not worth it. But he doesn't. He clearly just lets him do his thing.
There's a slight Clarkson Hammond vibe to Tony and Mopé, whereas, you know, I think Mopé's more encouraged. Now Tony's back, he's almost more encouraged.
Are you citing Top Gear?
Yeah, no, the Stuart Lee version of when he takes it down. You know, and he said that Hammond is just the kid that gets in.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it feels like, you know, now Tony's back, Mopé's even more sort of, you know.
Yeah,
I
he's
need
got
to,
license.
The big boy's back, I'm going to... Yeah, so God knows what they're going to get up to at Wolves.
Maybe he'll go in for Hwang and his potential jet lag having returned from...
Well, it's disappointment from the Asian Cup.
And it's disappointment from the Asian Cup. He'll go straight over there and say, maybe he'll like reveal a Jordan T-shirt under his shirt.
Say how much better he thinks Son is than him.
Yeah.
Another key returnee, Hwang Hee-chan, who scored 10 Premier League goals this season before he headed off to the Asian Cup. Mopé, though, maybe as he himself would put it, living... rent-free in all of our heads.
Maybe Mopé will be the only person in the country to criticise Gary O'Neill's Monday Night Football appearance. That really would set the cat amongst
them. Wang might not get back in, but because like Sarabi has done very well since like he's replaced Neto initially, then he sort of replaced Wang. And Cunha, I feel like I've got to publicly apologise to Tim Spears. I think I sort of said one time I was on here that it was the weirdest transfer of the summer, including Moises Caicedo, because he scored like 2 in 17 last year for Wolves, and then they probably had to pay. £44 million for him. And they had form, like, you know, they splashed loads of money on Guedes and Fabio Silva. So I kind of thought this would be the latest failed attempt to replace Raul Jimenez. But he looks great. Like, kind of the complete Premier League forward. I really, really like him, what he's done over the last couple of months.
Has he scored in all 5 games in 2024? Because Neil Mopé has.
I don't think he has.
Mm. Well, that's the other thing about Neil Mopé, is that at any other club, he's rubbish. But at Brentford, he's amazing. Yeah. So it just works.
There you go. It's going to be an interesting game, that one. Again, 3 o'clock Saturday, you know what that means. Ooh, at tea time on Saturday, you can watch Forest against Newcastle, in which Benji says there will be lots of
5 goals.
At
least. Yeah.
Yeah. Forest, a reminder, were 3-1 winners in the reverse fixture in Newcastle on Boxing Day. Chris Wood with a hat-trick. The only previous time Forest have done the double over Newcastle is when Forest won the title back in 77-78. I don't know what was number one.
Not Baby D.
Anyway.
Precursor to Baby D.
Also this weekend, Baby D was literally a baby when...
Would have been.
Makes you think, doesn't it?
Fulham Bournemouth that Saturday at 3. And could be. Who knows? We'll see. And then we'll talk about it and say some wrong-headed things on Sunday night in our Totally Football show there. Today, we're going to wrap up after this with... the big game that awaits us Sunday in the Côte d'Ivoire as the host nation take on Nigeria for the title of Champions of Africa.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Benji, as you mentioned, South Korea out of the Asian Cup. Stunned by Jordan, who will take part in their first ever Asian Cup final, and they will take on hosts Qatar. That's on Saturday. God, who would have thought that Jurgen Klinsmann would have come such a cropper with South Korea?
Hmm. We should also pay tribute to the role Harry Redknapp played in all this. Former Jordan manager, of course.
Oh, yeah. I completely forgot that.
Yeah, I think it would be remiss not to give him some props. Eight years ago, he was there. I think he did two games.
Now, also this weekend, there's the grand finale of the AFCON. Daniel Story joins us now. Daniel, how's everything going there in the Côte d'Ivoire? Is this trip living up to all your wildest expectations?
Yeah, last night certainly did. We left the stadium at around 11:20 for what should be about a half an hour journey. And the first 2 miles away from the stadium, the sides of the roads were just full of people waiting for the Ivory Coast team bus to pass. To say it was a party atmosphere would be understating it. The roads just kind of full of people as we sort of nerdled and nudged through. It was an astonishing. That's the first time I've seen Ivory Coast at this tournament, and they're obviously growing into it. And yeah, the country has exploded into party.
At the same stadium where they previously lost 4-0 in the group stages to Equatorial Guinea, prompting them to fire their manager, this time around beating Democratic Republic of Congo, who I think you were bigging up in our last chat, and booking their place in their home final. Absolutely extraordinary. What a goal from former hammer Sebastien Haller as well.
Radel hangs it back. Haller at the back post. Haller goal! Sebastien Haller!
It was a curious strike, but enough to earn them their shot at glory in the final, Daniel.
Yeah, it was. It was an odd strike. It sort of bounced it down accidentally, I think it's fair to say, into the ground and over Lionel Mpassi. But, Ivory Coast deserved it. DRC started the game really strongly, and I think we thought, oh, OK, this is what we came to see. And then they sat back, and it felt deliberate, but I think they were actually just goosed. You know, I think they were just tired after a long tournament. It was incredibly, even by Abidjan standards, it was incredibly humid last night.
Did Haller celebrate? Or did he do his sort of like, I'm the man celebration?
No, he went crazy.
Okay.
They all went crazy. After the game, they've been calling this team like the Revenant or tournament, the zombies. But last night in the press conference, they were kind of trying to draw a line under that and say, hey, we know that the 4-0 was a failure. We know we didn't deserve to get through the group stage, but we're here. You know, we've got a new manager. We've got a new feel. There's four new players in the team last night, four changes. And it does feel like a completely different team. They have now got to face the best team in the tournament, but it's the final we wanted after all the upsets.
Mm. Let's talk about the team they're facing, Nigeria. What remarkable drama about 85 minutes into their clash with South Africa, when Victor Osimhen thought he'd put them 2-0 up, only for VAR to intervene, Daniel.
Yeah, I mean, AFCON's been crazy enough, but VAR kind of did a hold my beer, you ain't seen nothing yet experiment. Yeah, I mean, Osimhen, his one bit of great skill in the game to turn a defender to run into the penalty area, he earns a penalty they score from, and then he scores, and as you say, VAR comes back, rightly so, and awards South Africa a penalty. It was basically,
so he takes the ball right down the other end and gives South Africa the chance.
Exactly right, and they take it in the 90th minute, and then it becomes a tale of two penalty takers in that Mokoena scored his first one and then misses his in the shootout. Troost Ekong scored his in normal time and scored his in the shootout. He wasn't due to be the penalty taker at this tournament. Osimhen asked him to take a penalty against Ivory Coast in that group stage win, and he's just kind of kept on keeping on with the penalties. I think he's Nigeria's captain. I think he's probably been the player of the tournament so far, just for their kind of relentlessness in the knockout stages. They haven't conceded from open play since their opening game. So, it's a fitting final. Troost Ekong, probably Nigeria's best player. I think Sekou Fofana has been astonishing in the knockout stages for Ivory Coast. There was a kind of doubt about those Saudi-based players coming into this tournament and their fitness. The central midfielder, him and Frank Kessie, are both in the Pro League, and they have been phenomenal.
Osimhen hasn't scored yet.
4-0 defeat.
He scored once.
Yeah, he's kind of weirdly been this sort of latent threat for Nigeria, around which Moses Simon and Ademola Lookman sort of run and roam. But yeah, the final is probably set up for him to score in it, I suppose.
You call them the best team in the tournament. Why do you make them such favourites for this final?
Well, until last night, they by a distance had the best front three with Osimhen, with Lookman and with Moses Simon. That slightly changed last night in that Simon Adingra and Haller both started their first games of the tournament, and Adingra is the best dribbler here. He was excellent again last night. So that tightens it up a bit. But Nigeria's defence has been phenomenal since that opening defeat. They're not really giving away chances in open play, let alone goals. So the atmosphere on Sunday will be incredible. Obviously, that will help. But yeah, to kind of repeat the point, this is the final we wanted. After all the big teams went out, after Senegal went out and Morocco went out, we wanted Ivory Coast, Nigeria. It's the first host to get to an AFCON final since 2006, which is really surprising given the quality of hosts over that period of time. So yeah, this is what we wanted.
Excellent. Nigeria beating South Africa on penalties. How many saves did South Africa keeper Ronwen Williams make this time, Daniel?
Yeah, not many. And if people haven't seen the penalty that Truus Tekong scored in the 90 minutes, yeah, watch it. I don't think I've seen a penalty before where a goalkeeper didn't get a touch on the ball and yet I blamed him for not saving it. He sort of dives the right way. And actually, we should say, Nigeria did their homework because they watched the South Africa penalties that Ronwen Williams saved and they believed that he did what they call these Superman dives, where he fully extends himself as far as he can to get to the corner rather than concentrating on necessarily where the ball's going when it's kicked. And Truus' penalty just rolls under his legs after he flings himself to one side. So no, he didn't get to any. He's already had his hero worship. It's someone else's turn now.
Oh, very interesting. Excellent. All right. So the final coming up on Sunday, Daniel, and hopefully we can catch up with you after that.
Yes, look forward to it.
Daniel's story in the Côte d'Ivoire. Very nice. Benji, so lovely to have you in today. Anything you want to add before we wrap it up?
Just musings on Arthur Masuaku, who sadly left the AFCON last night. You know, he scored that goal in the quarters, direct from a free kick. Do you know what I'm talking about? And West Ham Twitter went into a sort of frenzy saying, finally, proof. Because he scored a similar goal from a similar angle against Chelsea to beat them.
And was it a cross? Was it a shot?
Yeah, and everyone was like, it's proof that he meant it. But anyone that spent much time watching Arthur Masuaku should know that it's entirely possible that it was a mistake / fluke both times. Anyway, just nice to see him. It's nice to see Arthur.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you, Benji. Thank you, Charlie Eccleshare and Duncan Alexander and Rachel and Shelley in the booth. And you, listener, if you care to join us late Sunday, early Monday for our thoughts on the weekend, then by all means do so. And then we'll have a special early Euro show Monday afternoon, which Daniel should be joining us for with his AFCON final report. Also, we'll be counting down to the return of midweek European fixtures, last 16 in the Champions League, and that special Europa League playoff round. Yikes. For now, though, that's it. Have a great weekend from all of us here. It's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.